How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
Hey, welcome to Fitz Dog Radio. It's a special Thanksgiving episode. Lots to give thanks for in this world. I know some people are frustrated with the political situation, but let's remember something. This is the best goddamn country in the world! And will be for a very long time. Remember that. Great guest today, Sam Morril. Holy shit, I just talked to him. He's a guy, I wish I lived in New York because I think he and I would be very close friends. And we had a great chat. And then after we did the podcast for an hour, we talked for like another hour, which I realized we should have probably recorded that as well. Although there was some shit talk and we probably wouldn't want out there. A little bit. Thanksgiving is tomorrow. I don't know when this comes out. I think it's tomorrow when this podcast is revealed to the public. And I am very excited. My mom is flying out. Should be here later tonight. And she's come out every year for 20 years. She comes out for Thanksgiving. Big tradition. A lot of traditions here in Venice. If you've listened over the years, you know we always play soccer in the morning. There's about 40 of us to play soccer. We break up into two gigantic Braveheart teams. And then we all have dinner at our homes, and then we meet up at the beach at around 7 o'clock at night and go screaming into the freezing cold water, ride a couple waves. And then we usually go to the Malloy and Dunsky's house where there's a hot tub and everybody brings dessert, and they have this giant pot filled with spiked cider, and people stay till like 2 in the morning. But anyway, the Dunsky's and Malloy's are gone this year. And we're going to host it at our house. So I don't think the turnout's going to be that big. We're trying to get enough people to play soccer. I'm a little sad. I'm not going to lie to you. I feel like this tradition after we've been doing this for 15 years. Mom's been coming out for 20. Soccer and beach have been 15. And I don't know how much longer it's going to last. People fucking move. Venice is expensive. People move out. They sell their houses for a lot of money, and then they go live somewhere cheap like Virginia. So we got people. We'll be all right, but I'm a little down now. Thanksgiving's a big holiday for me. We always celebrated. We would go down to the Bronx to the house that my mom grew up in, where her father lived, and all my cousins from Long Island and Westchester and everywhere would come together. There was a bunch of us. There was like 13 cousins. I have more cousins than that, but in the New York area, there's 13 plus aunts and uncles, 6 aunts and uncles, and then my grandparents. And we were wild. The kids were fucking, Irish kids are nuts. And you get 13 of them in a small house in the Bronx. And we would go to there was a deli up the street that had a toy store, and we robbed them blind. We fucking robbed them. We used to steal liquor from our parents when we were like 12. We'd be in the basement and my grandfather's he had like a wood shop, and we'd get fucked up. We'd drink ginger ale, rye whiskey and ginger ale, because that's what they were drinking upstairs. That's the smell I remember walking. My grandfather's house looked like All in the Family, like that house exactly, with the stoop out front. And you'd walk in and you just smelled whiskey, ginger ale, and boiled turnips. And we'd have dinner. My uncle Paul would bring this turkey in this styrofoam cooler that was held together with electric tape. Same cooler all those years. He would put it in the trunk of his Ford LTD in Long Island. He'd cook it in the morning, bring it to the Bronx, put it in the oven at like 200 degrees. for like 6 hours while everybody just drank and talked and a lot of laughter until the turkey was bone dry. And then they'd serve it with, it was just all white vegetables. It was just mashed potatoes, turnips, cauliflower, like nothing had any color to it at all. Even the broccoli was cooked to the point of being light. And then my grandfather would tell, he was from Ireland. All my grandparents are from Ireland, but my grandfather would do these old Irish limericks, these beautiful, like, you know, poetic, lyrical limericks. And he would, and then as he got older and he would start to forget them, then my aunts and my mom would help him through it because they all knew them and they'd tell them. And then they'd sing. My Aunt Dolores and my Aunt Peggy would sing Irish songs. And it was amazing. It was great. That was my old Thanksgiving. This is the new one. So we'll see. I should keep this short because people want to hear Sam. Anyway, shout out to Tempe, Arizona. Thanks for coming out. We had nice full shows at the Improv. Hung out with my buddy Rob Dukes and his lovely girlfriend Mel. I drove around in his 58 Porsche. He let me drive it. We went to a cigar bar and had a lot of fun. Todd Barry's brother came to my show, was a very nice guy, hung out with him. There was a lot of comedy fans that were like, these two guys I talked to, I was on stage and I was like, how long have you guys been friends? And they said like 6 months. I said, that's weird, how did you meet? And they said, we each came to Dave Attell's comedy show alone and they sat us together. And ever since then, we just go to comedy shows together. How cool is that? I fucking love comedy nerds. They're the best. But there was a lot of, it was a little MAGA feeling. There was a guy with a MAGA hat who was like 6'3" with his arms crossed, who literally did not smile once during my entire fucking show. It made me so angry. But whatever, it was fun. I did some Ellen jokes and always good. So anyway, let's get to it. And by the way, I'm coming to South Africa. I'll be in Cape Town, South Africa, the first week of January, and I'm looking to do a stand-up gig. If anybody lives in South Africa that's a comedian, let me know. I want to book a gig in South Africa. Also, looking for a good video editor. If you can put together little one-minute videos for my special, I'm looking for somebody who can do a highly skilled, not a shit job. I need a good job. I got some other editing work too. So reach out, fitzdogradio@gmail.com. Also the special, if you haven't seen it, You Know Me, is on YouTube. It's got 500,000 views now. And tell your friends, click on it again, give it another watch. I appreciate that. Next week's show, we're going to have Howie Mandel will be on. And then we got Mark McGrath coming up, Adam Ray, Jeff Garland. It's going to be a great month of shows leading into the holidays. Also, San Francisco Punchline this weekend, not this weekend, next weekend, December 5th and 6th, 5th through 7th. Cleveland Hilarities, December 13th and 14th. And then in January, Janesville, Wisconsin, Nyack, New York, Raleigh, North Carolina, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, February in Vegas and Atlanta, and a lot of gigs coming up. Tampa, La Jolla, Pittsburgh, Toronto. Go to fitzdog.com, get some tickets, come out, see some live comedy, and I think we're ready to go. All right, that's it. Here is my guest. You know him from all of his specials. He's got some of the best stand-up specials that have been put out in the last 10 years. He's got a podcast called We Might Be Drunk with Mark Norman, and he's got a huge tour. I'm going to give out the dates later on. Here is the great Sam Morrell. Welcome. Sam Morrell's drinking from his Knicks cup. Nothing but... Yeah. Nothing but hope at this point in the season, I guess.
Yeah, they'll figure it out.
Where are they at now?
They're just hovering over 500, depending on when this comes out, I guess. But yeah, they look, it's just a lot of new players. They'll figure it out.
Dude, how big of a thrill was it the first time? Because I've seen the clips of you being at MSG and they put you up on the scoreboard.
It's insane. It's like that. I was like, that's my goal in showbiz. I'm like, just let me just get there. I'm kind of playing with house money now, but yeah, I was just, Mateo Lane, the comedian, is my neighbor, so we went to the game the other night, and it's his first game. He's a Chicago guy, and I'm like, shit, they're playing the Bulls, so I'm like, ah, shit, I'm taking them the wrong game. And he's like, no, I'll root for the Knicks. I'm like, oh, gay dudes rule. I can just switch him. This is like a girl, you know? And we took him. I didn't win the game. We're courtside, and it really is like watching with a woman, where he'd just be like, man, Josh Hart is hot.
Yeah, if you have good seats, man, you really appreciate the physiques on these guys. I'm
Oh
straight, but
my God.
I remember seeing LeBron James up close, and I was like, God damn, look at those calves. Jesus Christ.
He's ridiculous. Yeah. He's like 40. It's
Yeah,
insane.
I know.
This is when he should be declining.
What's going on with his son? Has he played on the same court as LeBron at any point for the
Yeah,
Lakers?
it was like they did it for the lead. They did it for the story, but it's like he clearly shouldn't be there. Like it's one of those. It's like, remember when you were starting out in comedy and there was like some showbiz guy's son on the open mic sheet, and you're like, this dude's gonna fly by me. God damn it. But then in a few years, they're not there.
They never are. I'm trying to think of like other than like I guess the Wayans brothers have had kids that
Yeah,
have done okay, right?
well, look, all of showbiz is nepotism, right? So
Yeah, but stand up is a
literally,
different sport because you can't fake your way through stand up. You're
well,
either making them laugh or not.
I think Michael Douglas's brother was a stand up and he killed himself.
No,
So
his
there you
son.
go.
It
It's
was his
hard. His
son.
son. Oh shit.
He was
It's hard.
awful. He was
Yeah.
awful. He was good at suicide. That was like the only thing he was really good at.
He fucking one and done. He did it.
One and done. Perfect record.
Damn.
The worst is the guy that tries to kill himself and fails, and now he's in some kind of life support that the family has to take care of him because he didn't crack his head all the way.
Well, by the way, we're like 3 minutes into the podcast. We're on suicide. We're a good combo.
Oh, well, I'm great at the algorithm. I
Dude.
make about $9 a month on YouTube.
Well, to answer your question, yeah, Bronny's in the G League right now, and he's not even doing well in the G League. He's not, I don't think, an NBA player right now. We'll see. Who knows? But it's looking kind of rough.
I'm trying to think, have there other been what other sports has been a father and son playing?
Griffey Jr. and
I was
Senior,
going to
that was
say,
like
yeah,
the big
Calgary,
one. But they were
right?
both they were, I mean, Junior was better and Senior was really good. So, but I mean, you don't want to be LeBron's son and play basketball. Do anything. Do you really want to be Frank Sinatra Jr.?
Yeah,
It's
I
not a
know.
great life.
It's not. Look at Liza Minnelli. That didn't turn out too well.
She had a run though.
Yeah, but she's been on drugs her whole fucking
I
life.
know.
Jesus
She
Christ.
was great. I fucking love Arthur, dude. That's such a great movie.
Yeah, and she comes in. My wife works at a podiatrist's office, and she's a patient. And she comes in, and her feet are fucked because she's, you
Jeez.
know,
I don't think you're supposed to be saying
No, I don't think I'm supposed to. So what do you think about Ellen leaving the country over the Trump election?
I kind of respect it. I mean, finally, someone is, I was going to say a man of their word. I guess a person of their word. Because for how many years are celebrities like, I'm out? I don't know. I mean, look, if you're going to leave, where'd she go? London? That's pretty good, right?
Yeah, she went not even London. No, she's out in like the middle of the country. She's down south in like some she's going to destroy some cute little town where people used to drink tea and take walks a lot in those clunky shoes, you know.
Oh, imagine her poor British butler that she's just going to rip to shreds. It's going to be the Ellen staff all over again. She's just going to cook them.
I know, but I think they're more used to it in England. I think they keep the stiff upper lip. You know, they got the palace guards, you know, where people fuck with them, all the tourists fuck with them, and they keep a straight
Oh,
face.
I was one of them. I did it recently.
No, you didn't.
I did. It's on my Instagram. I was like, let me see if I can tell my most offensive joke if I'll do it. And I was a little intimidated because no one was doing it. And I was like, shit. But I went up to him and I did my miscarriage baby joke. And I went up to him and he stomped on the punchline. And I was like, he really, that was like all he can do. You can't be like, fuck you, but you can stomp and like do your little march. So that was his way of being like, fuck off.
Oh, that's amazing.
So I'm going to be honest though. I was pretty nervous to do it.
Well, that's the thing. Those pranks always seem like a great idea until you actually have to be the douchebag in front of a bunch of people. And then you're glad you did it later because it looks good. But like, do you ever feel like that when you do those morning TV shows when you're fucking with the hosts?
Sometimes there's been a couple of times where it just doesn't work. And now you're just the asshole who ruined a segment. And it wasn't even funny.
Yeah.
But because they have to kind of react if they just. Even if they roll with it, it's funny. But if they're disgusted by it, it's funny. But if they kind of give me nothing, it's just kind of like,
yeah,
it doesn't really work. So, yeah, I've had a few that really. The one that people I seem to like the most, I think, was one was the Columbus human trafficking thing, where I just kept pretending Columbus has a human trafficking problem. I could see it bothered him, so I just kept going back to it. And I was like, man, human trafficking. He was like, what are you talking about? And then he was like, well, how long have you been funny? Or something like that. And I was like, well, there's nothing funny about human trafficking. I just kept doing it to the point where they ended the interview early, and then it cut to him going like, I don't get what he's doing. Like, I don't understand. And the female, it's always the woman always gets it, and the dude never does.
Yeah,
the dude is always, the dude always thinks he's like the funny guy. That happened in Utah where like some guy came in the green room. It's rare that now they kind of know I do it. So some of them are cool and they're like, we'll play along or we won't.
Right.
Some guy in Utah came in the green room and was like, I'm there I made Gary Veeder, who tours with me, come with me because it gets awkward. I need a friend at this point there because I describe it as like a bank robbery. I call an Uber as I'm going on to the set because I need a car waiting for me.
You don't want to loiter. You got the lavalier mic on still. You're like, fuck it, I'm going.
I'm out, yeah. And this guy was like, so you going to fuck with me on the segment? And he's like a clean-cut Mormon guy. And I'm like, I am. And he goes, all right, we'll see. Like, he's kind of like fucking with me in the green room.
Yeah,
I'm like, he can act tough all he wants, but like, this is his job. I'm just passing through. So I can so of course I keep taking it further and further, and he can't. And the woman was awesome. He was like, well, you'll never be back on this show. And I was like, I'm pretending. I'm like, oh man. And she was like, I think he can come back. And he was like, no. Like, he was a real dick about it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Dude,
Of course, as I'm leaving, all the people were like, can we take a picture with you? We hate that guy.
Course. No, the women, if you next time you come through LA, you should do Fox News has their, I think it actually might be an afternoon show, or I can't remember if it's morning or afternoon, but three of the hottest women you've ever seen in your life, and one of them, the hottest one, has like the greatest sense of humor. I came in and I go, and I was looking off stage and they go, what are you looking for? I go, oh, my, this is on the air. I go, my agent's supposed to be coming. He's Lebanese. And I texted him like an hour ago. Or no, I paged him like an hour ago. But I haven't heard anything from him. I don't know what's going on. And like the two of them were like, well, maybe he's just running late. And then the one really hot one was
dying. How do you not get that?
She's like, you don't get it.
That's such a smooth joke, yeah.
Yeah, and it happened. I did it like 4 days after the event.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it's for, is to just... That's the only reason comedians like us should be going on those shows, is to just burn a hole and make it weird. And
yeah.
And most of the time I'm just being myself, but it just shows how, you know, stiff those environments are. I've had a couple where they were mad I didn't go further now, but when it's pre-taped, like, what do you expect? Like, I know you're just going to cut everything.
Right.
But then it's also hard to get booked when you're like, I'll only go on if it's live. They're like, what the fuck's he going to do to us?
Yeah, yeah.
But I did New York One, which is like my hometown.
Oh, you know, New York One,
kid.
Right.
And it was like a 10-minute interview, and I was kind of playing it, you know, somewhat straight. And my friend went there after, and she goes, yeah, they were really bummed you didn't fuck with them.
Oh, no shit.
I don't know what to do in a taped interview. I just assume they're going to cut it.
Yeah. I went on one in Cleveland. There's this guy in Cleveland who's very good looking, and he's like, you know, funny, but he spit on me like while he was talking, big spit. And I go, dude, you just like anybody else let it go. I was like, dude, you just spit on me. And then he started laughing, and then I started laughing, and I got to send you the tape. We laughed for like 90 seconds. Like we just laughed wow. harder and harder and harder. And that was like the whole segment.
I've had a couple of those. Yeah. Actually, when we were at the Knicks game the other night, this is going to sound like a flex, but we were like so close to the freaking Bulls bench that I'm screaming. I'm a lunatic.
Yeah.
So when it gets close, the Knicks were down like 18. They came all the way back, ended up losing. But during that run, I'm going nuts. And, you know, they're shooting free throws. I'm yelling like, fuck you. You suck. And I'm at one of the guys, like the 12th man on the Bulls bench, this Italian kid is like, he goes, you're spitting on me. You're spitting
oh,
on
really?
Me.
Really?
And I was like, oh, shit, sorry. What do you say? Like,
I'm you were that up. Close that you could spit on him?
I was screaming. And then there's a guy behind me goes to the player. He goes, hey, shut up. You don't even play. And the guy goes, I play. It was just sad. I just felt like an asshole.
I play. Love that. I
mean, he's an NBA player. Shit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, he's like Potsy on Happy Days. That's before your time.
I don't get the reference, but it sounds like it makes sense.
He was the player that like he was always on the bench, and then one day they called him into the game, and so he ripped off his sweats and he had his underwear on because he was so used to not playing that he never even bothered putting his shorts on. What about Matt Gaetz? What's your take on that?
I mean, it must be not great if he's dropping out, right? Because they can't. I don't understand it fully, but isn't it that they can't? If he drops out, they can't show the report, right?
I think that's what it was. I think it's exactly like Trump trying to get elected so that they can't charge him. And right. Gaetz got. I said he pulled out, which he's not used to doing unless there's a 17-year-old girl with a Venmo account in the room.
Oh yeah, it's weird that they like. It's funny though. Like, I guess if you banged prostitutes back in the day, there was no real paper trail. But now,
right.
you Venmo. It's right. Like he probably wrote like whore right in the description.
Right,
you gotta write why.
Well,
but,
that
yeah,
happened.
17.
I don't know if you remember. Was it Jerry Springer? Who
yeah.
he was in Cincinnati and he hired a prostitute and he wrote her a check and he got busted
shit.
For it.
That's
yeah.
another way.
Yeah.
Damn, old school.
Yeah. But it is amazing. Like this guy is being considered for like really maybe the most powerful job besides the president in America.
Yeah.
And he's, you know, repeatedly hired underage girls to do drugs
well,
with them and have
it's
sex.
It's not just him. It's like everyone. It's like I feel like everyone appointed is associated with some sort of like sexual deviance.
Even what's her name? The
Linda
WWE.
McMahon.
Linda
Who's her husband?
Yeah. Well.
Yeah.
Not only her husband, but did you hear about like that? There was a referee who was accused of serially being a pedophile. And they always knew, and then finally they fired him, and then she hired him back and said, just stay away from the boys. And then he continued to do it. Like, she's a nominee? What?
Yeah, and also, I mean, I read about some of the stuff she did. It's like she had these programs where it's like you get wrestlers to go into the schools, and it's called, like, Get Real or something, and you teach kids about respect. And I'm like, how fucking bad are the schools? That they're like, send an Undertaker. He'll handle the kids. It's ridiculous. So, yeah, I mean, just being... Look, she's got like a Hillary Clinton thing where she's just married to a terrible person forever.
Yeah, right.
But she... Except Hillary, like, accomplished shit on her own. I feel like what is Linda... I know she's like... Look, Trump loves loyalty. She's been loyal to him forever. That's kind of the name of the game, is if you're loyal. I mean, the other guy, like... Did you see the clip of Pete Hegseth on... So
you see the guy with the white nationalist tattoos?
I don't know about that. Does he? I know he was like an Iraq vet.
Okay.
He's... I met him once, and it was like years ago, and he was like, I really like your stuff. And I was like, red flag. You shouldn't be involved in anything. Yeah, he had this. What was he nominated for again? It was for
defense.
Something
was it?
Exactly, it was defense.
Yeah,
and there's this viral clip. You got to look this up on Fox News, where this probably isn't his fault, but the fact that he's throwing an axe. It's like axe throwing outside
uh-huh.
Fox News, and it's like there's no like You're just in the street. You throw in an axe, and he misses, and it goes over the thing, and it comes like an inch from killing a guy.
No!
It goes into, there's a guy playing drums. It goes into his drum. And I'm like, this is the guy you've nominated for Secretary of Defense. There is video footage of him almost murdering a civilian by just being an idiot.
Yeah, no, I think he's tatted up. He's got some far right tattoos. I think. I don't know. I get all my facts.
I don't know.
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I saw the, I mean, it's funny, all the people nominated, it's like, of all the people nominated, you're like, well, RFK, at least he's fit, you know?
Yeah, he's got brain worms.
He's got brain worms, and it's like not a natural, whatever he's doing ain't natural.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, he's like 70-something, and he is like, he looks like he's in the WWE. He's shredded.
I know, he's shredded, and I think he works out at my gym. I belong to Gold's Gym in Venice, and I know Schwarzenegger still works out there, but I think RFK's in there a lot also.
I could see that he's too yoked. Cheryl Hines better look out before he Chris Benoit's her. I mean, yeah. this is some dangerous roids he's taking.
Oh yeah, he's definitely on Roy. Everybody is. Roids has become like the new vitamin supplement. Like people are just, you know, openly taking them.
Yeah, I'm sure those wrestlers were on a ton of other stuff, but they didn't have a great life expectancy.
No, no.
There was like a stretch where they were like, it was like Rick Rude, you know, Chris Benoit, all these dudes, Mr. Perfect, they're all just dropping. And
yeah, right.
I'm sure they were doing a ton of other shit, painkillers, all that other stuff. But
did you see the series, the docuseries about the WWE, the Vince McMahon?
I loved it, but my buddy Mike Lawrence is a diehard wrestling fan, so I'm like, wow, that was crazy. And Mike is like, they didn't go deep enough.
Yeah, you know? Of course.
But yeah, Vince, you know, murder adjacent, done all this crazy shit, grew that creepy ass mustache. He looks like Rob, what's his name, Goulet, the Vegas singer at this
Robert
point.
Goulet, yeah, with the fake tan and the, yeah. And probably a toupee, but it was so weird. I had no idea that like he beat up his son. He, you know, called his wife, called his daughter a whore.
His son is like, he's not trailer trash. This is a billionaire's son jumping off. Like, this is what he has to do to get a hug.
I know. And then he doesn't get the hug. Then Vince gives it to his daughter instead.
It was kind of like trashier Succession.
Oh, totally. It was totally Succession. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she actually seems sharp. If Trump had nominated the daughter, I would be like, all right, maybe, but not the wife.
Yeah. She does seem sharp, and she's got his ruthlessness, which you kind of need.
Right.
I mean, he just knew how to. I mean, they took everyone. WCW took everyone from him, and he was like, "I'll just create this." He wouldn't pay them more. So he was like, "I'll just create a cool storyline." And
that was really the coolest part of it. Yeah, it was like if a play is three acts, like Act Three was just like anybody else would have gone, like, "All right, I'm worth a billion. Let me get some golf clubs." And he's into hookers, whatever. Enjoy his life, and he just dug in. I mean. That's the thing about certain people. And, you know, we know them as comics. And you're a very successful comic. And you definitely grind. Like, you really earn it. And then you got the arena guys like Bert, where you go, like, this guy would be the CEO of a major company if he wasn't a comedian, you know. And he's got that dig in, like, he digs in. And in the same way that you do. Like, there's something about it that's not even about the money. It's just about, you know, winning. It's a competitiveness.
And working and being busy. Like, I get that. Bird is like, that tour he does, the Fully Loaded, is like, it's set up the way, like, he's like, I want it to be feel great all day. We're going to do fun shit all day. It's like summer camp for adults. He brings a portable sauna and cold plunge in the bus. I'm like, who the fuck are you, dude? Like, this it's amazing. I mean, I love it. He brings dumbbells. He's got a personal trainer. We're working out during the day. We're getting drunk at night. We're performing. And I was like, this is kind of, I guess, how you do it. This is kind of the best. You know?
I did one where we woke up in upstate New York somewhere, and there was a... that there was a giant kennel of puppies. It was like a fenced in thing with like 15 puppies in it. You just sat
why
there.
Why are they? I'm like, why are you doing this to us? I'm like, so we just leave these fucking puppies?
Yeah. Yeah.
That was brutal. But, oh, dude, I was on the bus with Bert, Big J, and Dan Soder. That was the run where Bobby Lee, the first night Bobby and I were having so much fun. And that night, he, I guess, was mad. He was in the top bunk, which I was too. I don't like, I hate the top bunk.
Uh-huh.
And Bobby's, you know, like 50 something. He falls off and cracks his face and has to leave the tour.
And
no one knows. We're on this group thread. No one knows he's going through this shit. Uh-huh. So he's just like, my face, you know, it's, I felt, we think he's being Bobby. He shows a picture of his face fucked up. We think he's being silly.
Uh-huh.
And the one person who answers is Kyle Kinane, who's coming in. He just like zings him. And meanwhile, he had to go to the hospital and like comedians were the fucking worst and leave the tour. And he was like devastated. He was so, he like wasn't answering my text. He was like really upset. And then, and then finally he did. But then, I mean, we just like, it was so fun. I mean,
what other crazy shit did you guys do during the day?
We played, we did batting practice at the Savannah Bananas ballpark.
Oh, nice.
We did surfing. I've never surfed in my life. I'm a city hick. So that was cool. And then
was it a surf pool or was it in the ocean?
It was in the ocean in Daytona Beach.
Oh, wow.
It was pretty cool.
Damn. How'd you get up?
I got up in the first like couple times. Yeah.
Damn.
I'm definitely not good at it, but I got lucky early on.
Yeah.
And Bert is like pretty good at every sport.
Kinda. Yeah.
But yeah, what else? We did a ton. Man, they were, Soder and Jay were just pulling, we were just all kind of fucked up on the bus. And Soder and Jay keep pulling up like these weird clips of just weird people. And we're all kind of taking turns sharing. And I shared this like, they're all their clips everyone's laughing at. And then I pulled up a clip. I'm like, Sam, like, pulls something up. I'm like, oh, it's Orson Welles telling this story about meeting Churchill. I think it's like the funniest story. And they all just kind of, they were all like fucked up. They just like stared at me like they didn't, they were like, what? it was like a 2 minute build up too for this punchline. And they were just like, huh. I just like ruined everyone's hang.
Right. Yeah,
it's
no,
this
he
clip that Mike Lawrence and I send to each other, like we're like obsessed with Orson Welles. We think it's hilarious. So I thought they would die, but they were like, nah. And Norman loves it too. So I was like, ah, they'll love it. And then nothing.
Didn't he do some? Isn't there a clip of him drunk doing a commercial?
Yes,
the for wine or something.
Dude, it's end of his life is the funniest shit you've ever seen because he's just like, he's this genius who has just got fucked over by the system. So he's so angry, and he's doing these weird. He's doing commercials for like peas or for wine. And he's doing this French champagne, Paul Masson. And by take four, he's like, Paul Masson is a good wine. And he's just bombed. And he's so fat at that point.
Yeah.
I mean, dude.
And he's yelling at the
humans.
Copywriter because he doesn't like the alliteration. He's like, exactly. Why would you say PPP three words in a row? This is garbage.
Oh, dude, that's the whole thing. He's a genius. And then but Hollywood just turned their back. And the fucked up thing is they gave him this like lifetime achievement Oscar.
Yeah.
But no one would give him work. So
why don't you think they were giving him work?
Because his movies were almost too smart and too good. And all they care about, everyone acts like it's new that they just care about making money. But he had, I guess a few bombs. He wanted to make like Shakespeare and stuff.
Yeah.
And I mean, Citizen Kane wasn't a big commercial hit. It was only No, it was afterwards. And he nearly got ruined by, he was, it was about William Randolph Hearst. And, and William Randolph Hearst hated it. Like he was like,
of course.
He owned all the papers. So he was like, fuck, trash this guy in the papers.
Uh-huh.
Like destroy this guy. Because he was mad they were making this movie based on him. And then he took it too far. He called him a commie. And that's when a couple other papers were like, this guy's a fucking tyrant, fuck him.
Yeah.
So that was the only reason Citizen Kane even really survived. But
pretty ballsy of the studio to even go forward with it, knowing you had to know that was going to happen.
Yeah, and it was his first movie. They just gave him all. It was a different time. He just got complete creative control. He wrote, directed, and starred in his first movie.
Dude, I think he was 24 years old.
24 or 25. He was crazy young.
Yeah.
And he's playing an old man in it, too. Like, it's insane.
Right. I know.
One of the most, it is, if you rewatch this movie, it's like fucking, it's insane. Yeah. It's the most ambitious thing ever. And he makes it work. And it's like, yeah. Oh, dude, he had all these great movies that just, like, Touch of Evil, Charlton Heston is playing a Mexican. It's ridiculous. It's like, you're like, wait, watching it now, you're like, this is the dumbest fucking, it's still a great movie, but. Uh-huh. The casting choice of him as a Mexican looks insane. Heston, like, says the movie sucks. Like, he trashes it. It's still a great movie. Uh-huh. Third Man's great. He made all these great movies, but he just couldn't fucking... the stuff just wasn't making money.
Right.
So he was like, I'll go to Europe where I'm loved. And he would just, you know, get investors to give him money to make these, like, tiny projects.
Have you been in any movies?
No, not really. I had like a bit part in The Joker, and I had.
Oh yeah, that's right.
It's always just like comedian or something. No, not really.
Yeah, you're a comedian on stage, in it.
But yeah, I'm a comedian on stage in the background, and then Norman and I wrote a movie, but we'll see. Like, you know, it's such a long process, man. It's been, you just waiting and waiting and waiting.
Yeah, I know, and. And the stuff that gets made is so like cookie cutter now. They really want, they're back to rom-coms and...
I think it'll switch.
Yeah, it's got to. I mean, I think it's going to switch when people start putting stuff out directly to... There's got to be a new movie channel that funds indie films, like going back to like what it was like in the early 90s when people were making $100,000 movies.
Dude, you're so right. Those are like some of my favorite movies. 90s is such an underrated decade.
Yeah.
So many good fucking movies. I watched one last night I'd never seen called Bound with Jennifer Tilly.
Oh, yeah, and of course.
That's a great movie, dude.
Sexy as shit. That lesbian scene is insane.
Oh, my God. But it's all, on top of that, it's a great movie. I looked it up. I was like, oh, I thought this was just like a hot movie. I didn't know it was actually good. And
yeah.
Just like indie movies like that were clearly low budget. That dude, that's the dudes, now women, who made The Matrix made that movie.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
The Wachowski brothers, really? Then now sisters, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Both of them became women. Yeah. And that movie is, but like Simple Plan, like Sam Raimi, like movies like that from the 90s, they're fucking great.
Like,
they don't make them.
Like Chasing Amy and
I like that one.
Brothers McMullen was pretty good.
Yeah. Ed Burns.
The Burns brothers. And I want to ask you some questions. I came up with a list of questions to ask you.
Ask away.
Well, I want to know about like rank the boroughs in New York, because you're a New Yorker. You're one of the rare breeds that actually was born and grew up in New York. So, like, I know, like, the Beastie Boys had that album of the five boroughs, I think it was called. And they started
Brooklyn,
some...
Bronx, Queen, and Staten. Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Beasties.
So how would you rank them? What order?
I mean, for me, it's pretty easy. It's Manhattan is one for me. That's where I was born. That's where I live. Brooklyn is an easy two because... it's just such a big borough. There's so much to it. There's so many different parts of Brooklyn. Like, you have so many. I mean, a lot of people would put Brooklyn 1, probably, just due to the size.
Yep.
But Queens 3, Bronx 4, Staten Island 5. But that's no knock on Staten Island. Like, they're all good boroughs.
Tell me what's good about Staten. I mean, I'm pretty naive. I've been to Staten Island 3 times in my life. Like,
Food is good.
Yeah,
good
Italian
pizza,
food.
Yeah, of course. I mean, great food. I'm not gonna lie to you and act like I spend time there, but like every time I've been there, I've been like, yeah, this is solid. I mean, I get the allure. Chris DiStefano was living there for a while, and he drove me crazy because he'd be like, "Come do my podcast." what'd it take you 20 minutes to get here? Try an hour 20.
Right, dude. There used to be a gig there called Grandpa's, And it was owned and run by Grandpa Munster, the guy who played Grandpa Munster on the Munsters. And he would, like, not only did he make you get there like an hour, this is back when you're like begging for paid gig, and this was like a road gig, you know, I'm going to Staten Island, and you'd have to get there an hour early, which meant, like you said, leaving 2 hours, 2.5 hours before. And then
you took the ferry.
Yeah. And then he would make all the acts stay to the end because he was really into a curtain call. So you'd all have to do a curtain call. And then you'd be racing for the ferry after that to get home again.
And
the crowds were brutal.
I did one there. I forgot the name of the club there, but it was like a known club there. And it was just a hell gig. It was awful.
Yeah.
But I've also had good sets there. I mean, you know. But yeah, Bronx, you have the Yankees. You have also good food. It's New York. You need good food wherever you go.
I feel like the Bronx is still not getting its due. I was born in the Bronx. I lived there for the first like 6 years of my life. Both my parents are from the Bronx. But I was in Throgs Neck. And like that whole area, the east side of the Bronx, is actually really fucking cool. There's like really intact kind of like turn of the century neighborhoods where there's the butcher and the cheese shop. And, you know, like real New York coffee shops that are still like run by Greeks, you know. And I don't know. There's something really charming about like.
You're in a time machine almost. It almost feels like it's like, I know what you mean. I feel like every time I've been to Staten Island, too, you're just like, you're in a grocery store. You just hear like, you know, Frankie Valli's playing. You're just like, I feel like eggs should be like $1.99, you know.
Exactly. Right. Yeah, I think if I was going to move back to my aunt, well, my wife's aunt died. My mother and my wife's mother went to the same high school in the Bronx. They went to St. Benedict's together. Isn't that fucking crazy?
That is crazy.
We only realized that like years later. And she knew my aunt. My mother-in-law knew my aunt. But, you know, so she had a house that we just sold. She passed away. And it was a fucking great house, man. It was three stories with a great basement, little backyard. You know, like the last stop on the 6 train is like right there. You could take the train into the city, and everybody's super friendly. It's like a stoop. Yeah. It's like a stoop neighborhood. People sit on the stoops and hang out.
My brother's kind of got that going, where he's like way deep in Brooklyn, but he's he's like last stop off the end. But then he's also got, he drives. He could take the bike. He takes a bike into the city. He's a
fucking. Does he really?
Yeah, I would never do it. But yeah, he does that shit all the time. And he, it's a nice life. They got a nice situation, and they're right by the park.
Right. Yeah, my brother's out on the other side of Prospect Park, and he rides the bike in, and he's got a crew of friends he's had forever. It's cool. Where do you live? Downtown?
I'm in the Village. I'm like a 5 minute walk to the Comedy Cellar.
So which airport do you like to fly out of?
They all kind of, LaGuardia or Newark, but
yeah,
JFK fucking sucks.
It sucks. It's
JFK is like our LAX. LAX is, I would say, the worst airport ever, but JFK is pretty bad.
Yeah, my wife came to get me. I flew back. I had a sweet gig last night. I was at the Tempe Improv for the weekend, but the Sunday night show.
I've never been there, dude. I always do stand up live. I've never done Tempe, but I heard Tempe is sick.
It's sick. It's great. But the best part is the Sunday night show was at 6 o'clock. So I got off stage and I went to the airport and I flew home on a 9 o'clock flight. It was sweet. And then my wife picked me up at the airport. It took her an hour to get into. Once she got to the airport, it took another 45 minutes to pick me up. And, you know, it's Thanksgiving week, but still, it's fucking crazy.
Yeah, I did Hilarities over the weekend. That's such a great club.
Oh, I'm there in 2 weeks.
I love it. Yeah, I heard your name. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and the best part is, like, the food is outstanding. It's one of the few comedy clubs where you look forward to the meal.
So and good, yeah. I was eating like, you're ordering like a fucking salmon, you know, I got a crusted walleye. I'm like, this is ridiculous. You eat so many. We did 3 shows on Saturday, so I was like, I'm stuffing my face.
You did 3 shows?
I shouldn't do it, but I'm kind of like, fuck, I don't know. I'm working on stuff anyway. I'm building back up anyway, so I'm like, what the hell?
You know? Was that? Did you hang out with the owner, Nick Costas? Was he around?
Of course, yeah. Nick, he made it super dark. Immediate pulling the thing Nick does. He'll tell a story about someone dying. I'm like, I just got here. Give me a minute.
Yeah, right.
But
right,
no,
right.
I love Nick. I love Nick. Yeah, we hung a lot. We're telling, talking just comedy. He's talking about how much he loved Richard Jenny. I love Richard Jenny.
Yeah,
so.
I love Richard Jenny. Jenny's so, one of the most, I think, underrated comics of all time. Like
of all time, yeah.
He did specials every, I think his specials were on Showtime, so people didn't see them as much as like the HBO specials. Is that right?
Or was he? So. I don't know. I think he did some HBO ones. I usually listen to him just on audio and stuff. He's such a good joke writer. Sometimes with jokes, I just like to listen.
Well, he was a sick joke writer, but he was also physically, he was so precise. Gifted. Like if you saw him do a show three times, and if he said the word skateboard, his fingers were in the same spot, his arm was at the same length, and he was like a dancer. He like moved around the stage. He was amazing.
He had one of my favorite jokes, because you know the difference between Charles Manson and every woman I've ever dated is? Charles Manson had the decency to look like a lunatic when you first meet him. That is fucking great.
That's amazing. Yeah, he got bummed out at the end. Things were slowing down for him, and he got bummed out.
Yeah, it's just like, showbiz is tough. I think he could have had a resurgence because he was so beloved by.
Yeah.
I mean, shit. I mean, Rogan loves him. That's a guy that would have like propped him up. You know, so many comics.
I feel like he was like Schimmel. Schimmel was the same way.
Yeah, I could see that.
You know,
two of my favorites to watch for sure.
I mean, they just went on the road. They didn't, you know, other than Platypus Man was a sitcom that lasted like half a season. Like neither one of them got any time on TV or film. They just hit the road like 40 weeks a year, every year.
Isn't it funny that that's kind of now the dream though, to be able to do the road and stuff.
Yeah.
And in the 90s though, they were like, fuck the road. This is like the sad thing, but no, it's kind of great.
Yeah.
I guess the money's better on the road now, but I remember when I met David Letterman, he was just kind of like, he's like, wait, you put out specials for free? I don't understand. He couldn't understand why I would do that. And I was like,
right.
Well, you know, it helps the road. And that was kind of the goal, is to make things better on the road.
Yeah,
and he was just like, we didn't do that. It was for us to get on TV. And I was like, it's different ages, man.
Yeah, well, I also think the road is a lot more livable, because now you got an agent and a manager. They're doing, you know, there's better flights. There's a limo picking you up. Like there's a process, because these clubs are used to people coming in every week, and the hospitality end of it is really good, you know.
And there's good restaurants in every city now. And
right.
And phones. I mean, that's a big thing about, like, right. If you want to call a friend back in the day, how much are you racking up on a long distance bill? How are you?
Yeah.
Like, I remember talking to Judy Gold about that, and she was like, you guys don't fucking understand.
Uh-huh.
Like, we would have to, it was so lonely.
Yep. No, you couldn't use the hotel phone, because as long as you'd go to the pay phone, you'd get a calling card, and then, you know, as far as TV, there was like five channels. There was no fucking streaming.
You find out you missed a gig, you're like De Niro and Goodfellas, just smacking a fucking phone in the booth.
Yeah, man. Damn. The pager. Had that pager going.
Oh, did you really have a pager then?
Yep, 780-3279. That's how I got all my gigs, on the pager. And then you always walked around the city with a pocket full of quarters. So it became 35 cents after a while, which really pissed you off. Then you needed the dimes also. And
you know,
then when you call in your avails, and so you'd have to have a pocket full of coins to call, because I was doing Boston. So I was leaving avails in Boston and New York every week. It was brutal.
Yeah, I remember the phone avails. I mean, it must have been so much better for your writing, though, that you're not just constantly staring at a phone. But meanwhile, there weren't the means to put out this level of content, because you know, you can't just upload stuff to YouTube. You can't just, you know, do a podcast. You can't just, so your brain is probably sharper.
Yeah.
But I guess you just wrote. I guess you just had hours of material. If you were like that type of comic.
Yeah, and when you were listening to your sets on like a cassette tape recorder. Yeah. You know, these big bulky cassette tape recorders. And I just remember like being in the hotel room for the weekend. There was no TV to watch. There was no phone to be on. So I would like take baths. That was my thing, is I'd record my set. Then the next day I'd take a bath and I'd listen to my recorder with a notebook on the side of the bathtub. And I would like tweak every fucking word. Like if something was a little bit different, I made a note of it and I did it differently that night. I look at my stand up in my first 12 years and it's so much tighter than it is now.
Yeah, of course. I also think there's something to like a comic's early work where there's this like this sense of urgency and desperation.
Yeah,
like this, right. This has to work. I have right. to. Your first act. I mean, think about when you're doing like a corporate or something, how often, or a college or something like that, where you just have to find a way to connect. Something about that first hour is so universal because you had to get work with that hour, and then you kind of become more you, and you want to feel like something is lost. Like it is good to become more and more you, but you don't want to become too indulgent, or you become kind of just like not that relatable.
Yeah, I know. There's a few comics that have got like that that I used to really enjoy, and I still respect them, but I don't like. I scroll past their posts now. I just go like, I know what it's going to be. I know what exactly it's going to be.
Leading with jokes is so important.
I remember like the first special, like so obsessed with tape night, like. All right, I'm going to get up. I'm going to work out early so I'm not too tired. I'm going to have only protein. I'm going to fucking brush my teeth at this time. You know, it's like I'm going to press my clothes the night before. Like every detail was just so thought out because it couldn't, like you said, it could not go wrong.
I see that. Sometimes I see younger comics and I'm a little envious of that feeling, even though I'm glad I'm not. Look, I still get nervous. It's not like I don't still get nervous, but there's something really cool when you see a young comic and they're just like hungry and they're fighting. I see at the Cellar. I see some of the new guys and they're excited and they should be because they got all this fun stuff ahead of them. So
You know who I like watching? He was just out in L.A. last week. Was that kid from SNL, Marcello?
Dude, he's funny. He's really funny.
He's funny as shit.
And he's so charismatic. I just did a show. Want like some New York shit. There are these guys. I'm actually wearing a Peter Luger hat right now because there's these guys do a show. They do a show at Peter Luger.
No, really?
They do all the New York spots. So they do. Yeah. I did one at Paragon Sports. I did one at.
Oh, so they're Peter pop-up Luger. Shows.
Pop-up shows, but they're usually really good shows.
And
Peter Luger was great to the point that we got Bodega Cat, me and Norman's Whiskeys at Peter Luger now, which is hilarious.
No! But
it's dude, we're at the Strip House, Peter Luger, we're getting into all the cool spots, which is amazing. So we go to Katz's Deli to do a pop-up show, and I keep getting fucking, it's one of those things where the show's at 10, and I just keep, they're like, you'll be on by 11, and I'm like, all right. But I'm like, so they're like, we should feel so bad, like it's running late, but here, have a sandwich. I'm like, all right. So now I'm like, feeling like a piece of shit. I'm drinking my own whiskey with doing picklebacks with their pickle juice, you know? And then I saw Louis at the Cellar. He's like, I'm doing the show too. I'll see you over there. I'm going after you, I think. I was like, oh, great. So Louis goes in and I guess he thought I went on already. He just goes on. He didn't come to the green room or anything. And he's like, oh, I'm next. And he does like 30. So I'm like, fuck. All right. This is really getting pushed back.
Yeah.
Then Marcello and I are the only one left. And he's like, I got to shoot a thing at 6 a.m. tomorrow. I'm like, go ahead. He was nice about it, but like, you know, I'm like, fuck. And then he goes long and I'm like, God damn it. And then it's like, before I know it, it's like 12:07 or something.
And you're in a deli.
And the crowd's I'm in a deli. Oh, I fucking ate it. I ate it so hard.
Dude,
and I ate it on a full stomach of two fucking Katz's sandwiches. I hated myself so much
and
after
you're
that.
You're buzzed. Bite. You feel guilty that you drank. Yeah.
Oh, it was awful.
But what a lineup. Jesus Christ. How much are they paying for those gigs?
I don't remember. They're generous. And they don't announce you, which is awesome. You know, they pack them out. But they're generous. But I forgot what it was. But those crowds can be really cool young people, or those young people that are like, I'm like, shit, they think I'm a... It's one of those rooms where like you have to be conscious of how likable you are.
Yeah.
Well, I'm like, shit, I open with a joke that they're going to think is mean too early. Right. Like I talk to Gary Veeder about this all the time on the road, where Gary has a lot of jokes shitting on his wife and they'll be like, and he's like, I love her. They're jokes, you idiots. But they're not even that harsh, but I think people feel weird laughing sometimes. And It's like, all right, got to open extra self-deprecating so they're comfortable laughing at these, you know?
No, it really is. I struggle with that because I get invited to do show. Like, I won't go to Los Feliz. I won't go to any of those, like, Echo Park, anything in the east side of Hollywood where it's really precious. Even, like, I live in Venice. I won't do shows in Venice because it is, like you said, if you're not likable and you're not relatable and you're not self-deprecating, then they just feel like, they just get injured, and then I get so fucking mad. The second I sense that from them, then I feel self-conscious, and I feel old, and I feel irrelevant, and I do a horrible fucking set, and I just can't put I can't put myself through that shit anymore. I really just want to work the main clubs in L.A.
Yeah, I feel that way too, but then sometimes I go back and forth, where I'm like, fuck, am I not relate? I want to be relatable. I want people. So I struggle with that because I do want to do all the shows. But fuck, I have a joke. I think it's funny. It bombed so fucking hard in this room where I said, I think I put it too early where I was like, my girlfriend's always complaining what a mess my place is. She's like, you're such a slob. Why don't you get a housekeeper? And I said, the same reason I don't get a prostitute. You're crushing it, you know? And silence from a big fucking room. And that's one where you're like, oh shit, I guess I got to cushion these jokes. Yeah, you know, clearly that's right. A silly joke. But yeah, man. So. I know I agree with you and I disagree because I'm like, shit, I just go back and forth.
Yeah, no, I do too. And then once in a while I slip and I go, all right, fuck it, I'll do it. And it can be magic. Like it can be a very, like if you get them right out of the gate, like Largo in LA is like that. Like Largo can be a little precious.
They're tough, right? I've never been there.
It's just there's like an agenda of what they like, you know? And look, Bill Burr goes there and he kills. He loves it there. So... But Bill kind of likes a fist fight. He kind of likes it when they just
on and off stage.
Yeah. Let me ask you this: rank the suburbs: Long Island, Westchester, and Jersey.
Jeez, I mean, Jersey's a state, so that's tough.
Yeah, but you know what I mean, like the like the parts of Jersey that are suburbs of New York.
Jeez, it's so hard. I like more of my family in Long Island, so I probably would lean Long Island one.
Yeah.
But just because I'm more used to it. But I don't really know. I don't spend time. I'm always in the city or the road, so I don't really spend time there. So I would probably go Long Island. I guess I got to go Jersey and then Westchester. Westchester just feels. Why do you like Westchester?
I'm from Tarrytown.
Fuck, I do like Tarrytown. All right. I don't.
Do you do the music hall?
I've done it. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, it's great.
I did it with Adele back in the day, and I remember leaving there. He was so funny, and he was just in such a bad mood. Uh-huh. And I remember leaving, and he's like, oh, I'm such a fucking hack. And I was just like, dude, you're the best. Like, you're all of our favorites. And I go, yeah, well, I'm funnier than you guys. But, oh my God, he makes me feel so, to this day, like I saw him the other night and I'm like, I feel so fucking unfunny after like, he's so good. He had some new shit that I was like, are you fucking kidding me? And of course he's not happy about it, but, I love him. And okay. I do like that area. Okay. Maybe I'll put them too. I just think, I'm thinking in sports terms because of Jersey.
Yeah.
Fuck. Maybe. I mean, you know what? Fuck it. Actually, Westchester's closer to the city, so I'm gonna go Westchester one, and I'm gonna do a complete reverse.
There
Westchester
we go.
One, Long Island two.
Okay,
because you like Tarrytown's like what 20 minutes from the city.
20 minutes from the city, and we're on the Hudson River where we used to swim when I was a kid.
Hudson's beautiful.
You got like, and the best thing is like Long Island, you got one fucking road in and out, LIE, and it's a parking lot. If you're in Westchester, you got the Bronx River Parkway, you got the Sawmill, you got the Cross Bronx, you got the Taconic. There's so many ways into the city.
Yeah, I'm thinking Jersey and like, I don't really know. The thing is, I don't, other than the comedy clubs, I don't know it that well.
Do you do the Stress Factory in New Brunswick?
A million times.
That is always a story. You come back from that club with a story every time.
Yeah, Vinny's out of his mind, but I love him. And I mean, I love the room. The room is just kind of like, I do better in that room with my jokes than they deserve to do. I feel like you get like a little bump because of how on top of each other. Everyone, last time I was there, my buddy Dennis showed up just fucking wasted. My childhood friend, his dad was like a giant party animal, but he loved it. I mean, he passed away a while back, but Dennis is there. So I'm like, can I tell a story about your dad? And he's in the crowd and he's like, yeah. So I was like, all right, I'm telling this story. He used to get us fucked up when we were kids and we would go to the bar with him. We'd be like 18 or something. And we walked in. I remember one night, we must have been like 19, 20 or whatever. And we walk into a bar and his dad would just walk up. He walked up to this hot older woman. He was like, lady, what I would give to fuck you up the ass. And we were like, oh my God, what the hell is he doing? Even then, we're like, Jesus Christ. So I walked up to her and I was like, I'm so sorry about that. He's a fucking asshole. Like, and she goes, finally, a gentleman. And behind her, he's doing this. Like, he was trying to set us up. He's being a piece of shit so we look good. And I ended up hooking up with that woman.
No.
Yeah, because of him, she blew me.
You didn't get her in the ass, though. He was trying to get you in the ass.
He was trying to get in the ass, but he was like that type of dude that was just outrageous.
Yeah.
But he did have a good heart. And it's
that's
like,
awesome.
Man, that's awesome. Surprisingly had a good heart after all the cocaine he did. But in the end.
Did you ever get hurt from drinking, like while you were drunk, injured?
Nothing horrible. When I was like really young, you know, like minor fights, but like I couldn't fight. So that they ended pretty quickly. So
but you seem like you drink, but you're a good drunk.
That's the only way I can keep going is because I don't get that drunk anymore. I'll just, you know, I'll get like a buzz on, but like it takes the joy out of it when you get really fucked up. You know, like the last time I got really fucked up was on Bert's cooking show with Ric Flair.
Uh-huh.
And it was like, it was all, I don't remember anything. I saw Jim Norton the next night at the Cellar, like the next week at the Cellar. And he was like, dude, what a nice voicemail you and Bert left me. And I was like, no idea what you're talking about. He played it for me. It was fucking brutal. It was like just Bert and I making no sense, but being like, oh, we fucking love you, Jim. Yeah. You're fucking awesome. But I don't enjoy getting that fucked up. It's not worth it for me. I don't like losing a whole day, but I do love, there's nothing like the wind hitting your face in the winter, leaving a bar
with a
nice buzz. You had a few whiskeys. I love that. So.
Right. And when you do We Might Be Drunk, are you guys drinking every episode?
Not every yet, because sometimes we'll have a sober guest on and we don't want to, you know, we kind of just try to do whatever they do.
Right.
But yeah, I think we've had drinks with people who don't drink on before. Yeah, we just did one with Hasan Minhaj and he's like, we were drinking and he was like, oh, I don't drink. And I was like, oh, I heard you like banana stuff. We're doing like a banana Manhattan. And he's like, well, I like bananas, but I don't drink. And I was like, oh, sorry.
That's hilarious.
So we were just getting sauce, but we don't, but Mark is also like, my drinking buddy off, like we don't drink that much together anymore off the podcast because we're just never around. But I mean, he's like one of my favorite people to drink with. That's how the pod started. He's just we're both good drunks. We just get more and more positive, I think, when we get drunk.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's easy.
So do you feel like your friendship is closer because you're like, when you drink, you're a little more, like you said, you're a little more emotional and like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But no one likes the really emotional drunk. That guy's the guy who's like, you're my best friend, dude. I'm like, we barely know each other. That's the weird drunk where you're like, oh God, the guy who takes it up. It's almost like you're like, fuck, this is like how women feel. They're just like a little uncomfortable.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're like,
it's also
you're pushing this on me.
You also get that after shows when somebody comes out and like this happened to me two nights ago in Tempe and this guy comes out. And he's like super alpha male. He's got on like an Izod shirt and his hair is like a little bit. And he comes up and he grabs my hand, like hard handshake with the pull in, with the Trump pull in. And then he's like, you were fucking great, man. And I said to him, I go, look, dude, I'm going to need you to take one step back. You know, like
I said, this is too intense.
Yeah. I said, this is a little intense. I need you to take it down a notch. He's like, no, he's like, oh, yeah, I totally get it. That's the thing. I find that if you put up boundaries with people that are obnoxious, they totally respond to them because they just like, they kind of know.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I had a friend bring a friend over to my place recently, and his friend is a lot. Like, it's one of, like, he's kind of like, you know, when you have your limit to what your friend can be and then they have their limit and they bring them over and the guy's just obnoxious. He just says shit And he like blames it. He keeps blaming it on autism. I'm like, no, I think he's rude. I think he seems confident. I don't think this is what autism is. He's like, no, he's autistic. I'm like, he's very confident. He's looking me in the eye. All right. Insulting like everything. He's just a weird dude. But yeah, he was drunk and he keeps trying to talk about like, the Middle East. And I'm like, we don't even know each other. This shouldn't be like a first hang type conversation.
Right.
And then everything I said to it, he would get like really emotional, and I was like, "Hey, let's just put the game on. How about that?"
Yeah. But, do you think Mark Norman has? You think he's on the spectrum?
I think he can't help himself. I don't think he's on look, we're all on a spectrum, I guess.
Right.
But like,
right.
I think Mark is. I think he's fine. I think he's just.
I mean, I only say it because he's mentioned it in his act. Like he's made a joke about it.
I think he thinks he is. I think I would argue he's not because.
Yeah.
I think his social skills are too good. He's.
I just think his brain works so fast that he seems like he has something. You know, he's got that Rain Man ability to like put thoughts together.
Yeah, I think he can't help himself. Like, he can't stop the words that are coming out of his mouth in time. Right. But I don't think that means he's autistic. I think he just... Because he's also very... If you just get him one-on-one, too, he's very skilled socially. Like, he's a very...
Yeah. Right.
And he's
right.
And I think he does, you know... Yeah, I would say... I don't think he is. Because I know autistic people. And I think it's much more... I guess there's a spectrum. But the ones I know, it's much more severe than what he has.
Is he your eulogy guy? If you die, is he the guy doing your eulogy?
I hope not. He's going to plug tour dates at the end. I got four tonight at the Stand. Ah, oh, God, he's going to kill me. Comedy. Going to miss him. I don't know.
That's hilarious. All right, speaking of tour dates, I'm going to read some of yours. Jesus Christ. It sounds like you're doing some clubs to get the set together, and then you're doing a run of theaters. Yeah.
Yeah, I can get by right now doing new stuff, but it's like, you know, you just want to make sure it's airtight for when you hit it that hard.
Yeah, so the club dates are San Antonio, January 3rd and 4th, Cincinnati, January 10th and 11th. Pittsburgh, are you doing the Pittsburgh Improv?
Yeah.
That's a down and dirty club. You got to earn it there
a little bit. I like it.
January 23rd to 25th, and then Charlotte after that, and then the tour starts. Richmond, Philly, D.C., Bethlehem, Tulsa, Austin, Houston, Memphis, New Orleans, Knoxville, Nashville. I mean, it goes on and on.
I'm either coming to your city now or it will be in the fall, but like I'm hitting like, at least, I think it's like 48 cities in a few months. So,
taking a tour bus?
The whole time, except for the first few days, it's tour bus. So that'll be interesting to see how that works.
Have you done that before?
We did it on a few runs last year, and I loved it. I mean, everyone thinks that, you know, comedians party super hard, but we were like pretty disciplined. I mean, we drank pretty much every night, but you know, and by we, I mean me and my tour manager Brian and James, who films. Gary doesn't drink, but you know, I just get a bunch of DVDs. We watch some movies on there. We drink some whiskey. We wake up. We find a rec center. We play ball and then get breakfast. And then I love the tour bus because you just have a day in that city. You don't have to travel all day.
Yeah, you don't have to pack and unpack. Your shit is already in the bus.
And then,
where do you shower?
Either the rec center or the... Or the venue will have a shower sometimes.
And
usually
ever,
they have a shower.
Do you ever have to rent a hotel room for showers?
I haven't, but Ari told me he does that. He's done that before. So I haven't. It hasn't come to that because my tour manager's thorough and great, so he knows where there's going to be a shower. So if the venue doesn't have it, we'll just... That's the thing with the South and the Midwest and stuff. All these new rec centers, these government-funded ones are, like, gorgeous.
No shit, really?
We'd go to, like, the Y or whatever, and there'd be a sauna or a steam room there, and I'd be like, where the fuck was this? Like, I love the Y.
The YMCA and AAA are the last two American institutions that I can get behind.
It's
AAA, man, you call... Great. You don't know because you don't have a car, but, like, my whole life... You call AAA, they're there in fucking 10 minutes. The guys are friendly. They know what they're doing. It costs like $99 a year. It's great.
Yeah, same with the. I mean, I used to go to the rec center in the city. It was like 150 for the year, and it's like, think about what a gym in New York costs. I mean, holy shit, you had everything there. It was amazing.
Wait, you go to the rec center or the YMCA in New York?
Well, they had rec centers, and I'd go to both in my life. But I mean, yeah. The rec centers in the city had like pools and.
Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy how crowded they get. You're literally just swimming. Yeah, Asian dudes love to swim, dude. Yeah, a lot of Asian dudes just like tight physiques, strong old Asian dude. And basketball courts is great. I mean, we get games cooking, and it would get physical. We got one guy in Portland, and I was like, this guy, he's like, I'm a fan. I was like, oh, cool. And then he was guarding Brian and getting like fucking physical. My tour manager Brian is like a fucking he's a take no shit type of guy. I love him, and he's like, he doesn't give a shit, and he's like fucking elbowing him back. I'm like, god damn, I'm gonna get a fight. I'm gonna lose a fan. This guy's gonna get a refund for the show tonight. But I mean, I love it, dude. It's so fun.
Yeah, that's awesome. You're not coming to LA though, I noticed.
I tried to on that West Coast run, but they wouldn't give me the venue I wanted for that night. We lost it, so I ended up doing Sacramento instead. But I'll come in the fall. I'm also thinking maybe I shoot my next special in LA because I've never done a West Coast special, and I kind of like my crowd out in LA.
That'd oh, you do? Cool. Oh, okay.
I don't like crowds in LA. I like my crowd in LA.
I was gonna say I don't particularly love crowds in LA, but there are definitely comedy fans. There's people that like, that's why I like the store, is I feel like it really attracts the people that understand comedy and they see it a lot, you know. Maybe I had these two guys last night in Tempe. It was so cool. They're sitting at a table together, and he said something, and I go, oh, are you guys friends? And he goes, yeah. I go, how long have you been friends? He goes, like 6 months. I go, oh, a new friendship. I go, that's kind of interesting. How'd you meet? And he goes, we came to see Dave Attell, and we both came alone, and we sat together. And ever since then, we've gone to see like 5 or 6 shows together. And I was like, that's so fucking cool.
That's
like, I love people that come to shows alone. They're the best.
Me too. I saw Nikki used to post about that a lot. Like Nikki Glaser used to always say, I think it's like she would repost people coming alone and be like, this is cool. And I was like, I like that she did that. Cause I think it's going to shit alone is fine. I mean, like just cause laughter, you're still sharing the experience with other people. Like I used to go to movies alone on the road all the time, and I loved it.
Yeah. For sure. All right. Listen, man. And your special, we want to plug your special. It's called You've Changed.
Oh, yeah.
And it's been out, what, for like 4 months?
It's been out for a minute. Yeah, it's on Amazon.
On Amazon?
On Prime Video.
Okay. I'm sorry I didn't get a chance to watch it, but
oh, no problem,
I can't
man.
Wait to see it.
Who the fuck watches comedy anymore?
Well, I'll watch the first comedians. 20 minutes. You know,
yeah,
I always
comedians,
watch the first
it's hard.
20. Yeah.
But for comedians, it's hard. I don't want to get influenced ever. I'll watch like clips and stuff, but I'm always nervous I'm going to get influenced by a bit's going to fall into my head. You
yeah,
know?
Right.
But I should watch more. There's so many good ones out there. And
yeah.
I do. Anthony DeVito, my friend, is always like, always listening to comedy. And and he says it helps him write because it just gets his mind in joke mode.
Well, it also makes me push myself harder because I just look at somebody who's really got a tight special. And I go, come on, man. You can fucking do it. You can do that. But
I
always
feel, but
enjoy
I
yours.
I watch so much comedy. I always watch you too, man. You're a fucking great comic. But I always watch, I was watching Attell. And, you know, I see a lot of comedy at the Cellar. I'll just like stick in the room and watch a little bit. And so I feel like I still get a fix. And also it's like in the last couple of weeks, it's been like Attell, Louis, you know, Colin Quinn, like all these great comics are always there.
Yeah.
Bill Burr. So I see a lot of good comedy there.
Yeah. That's great. All right, man. Well, I'll see you soon. I'm going to be in New York in January, so maybe I'll hit
you
up.
We got to get you on that pod, man.
Oh yeah. That'd be great. I would love that.
Yeah. We'd love to have you on.
Okay, cool. All right, brother.
How do you feel when you switch to GEICO and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today's actually Friday. So yes, happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with GEICO feels just like that. Get more with GEICO.